I've seen you wearing this for ages. Mr. Chris Hulsbeck, get up here. And I'm not sure where Mr. Tell is. Is he still out in the balcony? Yeah. Yeah. Tell. Oh, well, he'll be here soon, I hope. I can't really see anything like this. Thank you,
Bart.
But, yes, is your mic operating?
Yep.
Good. Because I'm going to sit down as well. Because now I can actually see. We'll see when Jeroen gets here. Yeah, the artist, he always fashionably late, right? Isn't that an artist's privilege? You guys, do you often come late to these occasions?
No, I want to say I'm Dutch, so I'm always, but he's Dutch too, so it doesn't really work. So I'm like, shit, no. They were supposed to be really punctual. It's the Germans too, I think. Yeah,
not to things like this. I'm usually on time.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. So let's blame Jeroen when he gets back here. Like,
let's
give him a big, I don't know, get up here when he gets here. Let's do something
just
like that.
Just hide. Everybody hides.
Yes. Yep, that's a very good idea. Let's try that one
totally
out.
Deserted.
Shut off the lights and just be quiet. as I said to these guys as well, I am just going to wing this because I need your help. But I knew you guys from before. You have been kind of busy doing music of sorts, I guess. How did you get into making music on the computer? For instance, let's start, Ryan.
On the computer?
Yes, on a computer. Was the Commodore 64 the first one? Or?
Well, yeah, well, actually was. And it was really weird because my neighbor, he had like this Texas Instruments, I don't know what it was, and I really wanted the same machine. And then my parents talked to friends of them, that you should get a Commodore 64. Like, no. We want that Texas Instrument. It was a very lame machine.
Yeah.
So, and then their friend insisted that they should take the 64. So I almost
was. You almost went Texas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was. So it was my first machine, actually.
Okay, cool. And Chris, you're.
Yeah, so I wanted to own a synthesizer.
Ah.
And family couldn't afford one. But then I read in a magazine that the Commodore 64 has a synthesizer sound chip.
Yeah.
And so I knew that was my way to own a synthesizer. So I saved up money for the Commodore 64.
Yeah, well, that's a good choice, I guess. And I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I do know the original story of basically your first big track, Shades. Can you just take a quick thing about that?
Yeah, so Shades was, that was a contest in a magazine in Germany, and I sent a piece in, and I had actually just hoped to get on the cover disc, so like be one of the top 10 people or whatever, and then I won the contest, so that was...
That's a good start.
Very nice, yes. And nice surprise.
And what was the prize in that? Did you get to do...
Yes, they paid 1,500 Deutschmarks.
Okay.
Yeah. And then a short time later, I sold them, you know, the editor wanted to know, hey, how did you do this? And I said, well, I put the hex numbers in the memory and blah, blah, blah. And he said, nobody can do that. And I said, yeah, I have an idea. I want to make an editor to make that easier. And so I developed a sound monitor.
Yeah.
And I sold that to the Sister magazine, and it was another 3,000 Deutschmarks.
That's
and
nice.
With the combined money, I bought an Amiga computer.
Oh, so you went that way. And I think that we have joined now
right?
by Mr. Tell.
Yep.
Hello.
So you're
late.
You're disrupting Chris here now. So, Amiga, keep on.
Yeah, so... I actually had the Amiga right after, well, that like a few months after I finished the sound monitor. And then I did everything like Jana Sisters and R-Type, Katakis, everything I did on the Commodore 64 while the Amiga was sitting there.
And, just teasing you.
Yeah, teasing me, yeah. So it took me like another 2 years to then make the switch to Amiga.
Okay, that's...
His story is so much better than mine.
It is, so, but do give yours before I jump onto
your... There is no story.
Okay, so how did you get into game music then? Game music, not anything else.
I'm actually thinking, I don't know, I have a very bad memory.
Think about that.
Oh yeah, I think it was Charles, yeah. We were on the phone with Charles for 6 hours an evening. He was really, he always had really long talks, Charles Deedham.
Yeah.
With you two? It's really weird.
But he planned.
He kept on talking and talking and talking and talking.
As far as I remember, it was like this, that I was doing all the Minix Noise music, and at some point we got so busy that I couldn't do something, and he started scouting for other talents, and you came up.
That's a good story.
So we needed Jeroen to actually tell that story. That's good. So that's why you're late, to come in and save Ryan from this. Right. So welcome, Jeroen. We were trying to hide, but we realized it wouldn't surprise you anymore. But you're here now. That's all good. So what about you? What was your first computer, and how did you get into computer music overall?
My first computer was a ZX80, which I borrowed from my uncle. It was very limited.
I had one as well.
I wanted to make music on the computer, basically. After I got this Casio watch that had melodies, and I was really young at the time, maybe 8. When I got the Casio watch, and I knew it had melodies in it, and I thought someone programmed that, and I want to do that with computers, but there was nothing around to do it with. So when I was 10, I got this ZX80, and I think it was 10, yeah. Started like using this beep command in BASIC or something, and this beeps comes out that I programmed. It was like, okay, this is wonderful, but this is too simple. Then 1982, a friend of mine got the Commodore 64, and I heard something about that thing. Or something about a SID-chip that just... I don't know what it was. The music was still very bad, all these Jupiter Lander beeps and whatever it was. But I heard of something going on there, started doing, reading up on making a BASIC sound player. So that was the second computer I bought also in 19... That was 1984, actually. I bought one with my brother. Okay. And I started doing BASIC programming. Then met Charles at... referring to you, Ryan, by the way. Then I met Charles at the demo parties in Venlo.
Yeah, I know these parties.
And he was already like a very basic music player. I used to use your sound monitor, by the way.
Me too. Just, I started with your sound monitor.
Yeah, just a little bit of doing this. That was machine coded, you know. It was really, really cool. Took too long, too much in the rest of time and memory. 45 and 90 kilobytes or something. But anyway, it was still cool to use it. And then it said, Charles, okay, build that in, and then we had the Monflare, and then, did demo disc with the tunes, went to the PCW show in London, and since then I did the game music.
Oh, that's cool. And you're interconnected in that way as well.
Actually, I didn't know until he just mentioned it.
Exactly. Yeah. So this is why this is for, to give the world more information about how things are working, right?
In a world, one man.
Not really. There's a guy called Jens Christian Hus. I can't speak Danish. Sorry about that. But Hus, thank you. JCH. He's been doing sort of a comeback now in the sense of the C64. He's been doing a SID player for the web, which you guys should look up if you haven't seen it yet, deepsid.cordian.net, I think. And one interesting bit is that, because he's been using the power of the web and actually interconnected it with a lot of data sources, so you can actually get a nice graph of the busiest years when people have been active. So I took a sneak peek on you guys when you guys were actually active on the Commodore 64. And it's a bit interesting, because I think that, Jeroen, you're period actually outspans both of these when it comes to making the most tracks. I think yours was 86 to 92, and you actually 89, 90, something around that, and Chris was 86 to 89, 90. But it's quite intriguing to actually see the amount of releases that you've been working on. I mean, game music overall, you guys came in there via... Charles, I guess, we am on, or...
I think I actually got into it because of myself, because I really triggered it. I worked my ass off to get my hands on machine code and to get the right monitor get turbo sampler.
And that's the way it is, right? That was your breakup, right?
Noisy Pillars was the first demo in 1987. Mm-hmm. But when we did the first Mon Tracker, it was for Hog, it was actually 1986, and it was released in 1987.
And you're born 72, so
yeah.
So you were extremely young. That's crazy. But
yeah, but so I really pushed myself into it because I wanted to make game music. That was the one thing I said, like with the Casio watch, I went to hearing what the Sid could do. Then I heard really awesome music by Rob Hubbard and Martin Galway and Van Douglas, and I was sold. I just knew that I had to do game music, and then I pushed forward every day until I just got into it.
Well,
like a young dog doing it, you know, just biting around. Just seriously, just a passion, pure passion. What was the question again?
Well, actually, that answered it pretty well. I mean, Chris, you've been making music for a lot of platforms as well. And I mean, yes, you wanted to make music, but how did you actually end up in the gaming side of things? You met some other people doing games, or what was it?
Well, actually, my first dream was to make games, not music. I mean, I wanted to own a synthesizer, but I really wanted to design games. And, well, as he mentioned, my machine code is not that optimized. Anyway, I wasn't that great in designing games, but a friend of mine had already, like, sold a game to a company. And he was working on a second game, but he wasn't good with music. So I made the music for his game. Oh. And then, yeah, so, and then after Sound Monitor, I just called up companies, and one of the first companies I called was Rainbow Arts, and they hired me right away.
That's a good one. Yeah. Oh, well, it's taken you quite far anyway, so. And, I mean, coding-wise, have you guys always been writing, have you coded any players? You're just making the music. but
no
Jeroen,
clue.
Jeroen, you have been programming as well.
Well, players? The first one was, of course, by Charles, and we programmed it together with a friend of mine constantly to optimize it or to add some effects. But in essence, it was just a player by me and Charles, and it kind of remained the same. But I did my players on. I converted that thing into a workable one for the Game Boy, Nintendo, the Sega Mass System, all that stuff. So it was, I coded my fair share of.
And Chris, well, you've been doing a lot.
As well as him, I wanted to make games too, but I never got around to it because I was already doing game soundtracks and always contracted to do game soundtracks, so I never got around to finishing games or the game design and everything. Not that I was a bad coder, but never got around to it just because of music.
Well, eventually I got a little bit better, and then I did the follow-up was TFMX.
Yeah.
And there I stumbled upon this idea of sound macros. Mm-hmm. Which I called arpeggios in there, but they morphed into something else where for every note triggered, essentially like a little script is run, and that enhances the capabilities of whatever you want to express with a sound design-wise, by a magnitude. And even today, I still find out things like that. And I ported the same concept then over to the Amiga, TFMX Amiga, and then later even, so modified TFMX versions ran on Super Nintendo, on Sega Mega Drive, Atari ST, PC, and we developed then a sound system called Musix. By then I wasn't programming anymore, but that was Factor 5 internal, and they still took the same sound macro concept and we developed it further. And we actually licensed it to Nintendo. So for a while, it was the official third-party sound tool from Nintendo, and it still had my sound macros in there.
Oh, that's quite cool. I do remember that you kind of completely twisted my mind with the Turrican 2 intro soundtrack. And yes, it's built to just show off that you have seven voices and stuff. Because I remember it was like coming home, listening to it, it was like, hang on. Okay, so I'm isolating the Amiga separate stereo channels. Like, okay, one, two, okay, and three, four. No, it doesn't work. So you kind of tricked me a lot before I actually looked into it.
Yeah, I mean, with a lot of memory, you could have also done it with clever sampling, maybe.
Yeah.
But overall, it worked together with the game not having that much memory, and it loaded quickly, and then the sound came on, and I composed the intro to, like, one more voice, and then it just added, yeah. And thanks to Jochen Hippel, we have to mention him, the Atari ST sound guru, he wrote this absolutely fantastic mixing where he emulated the Amiga hardware on the Atari ST, and he allowed me to port it back to the Amiga and then use it as, like, four voices mixed with his mixer, and then three original Amiga voices, and that was why it's seven.
Yeah, which is a quite clever concept, and then you only need to think the sound design from the beginning so that you're not showing the lack of mixing possibilities with the mixed channels. It's a good planned music, I guess, that you're not just making the notes, you need to really think about when creating the song as well. As
I think that's true for all the platforms, like Sid, yeah. You have to write music with boxing gloves on.
Yeah.
That's how it feels. Yeah, seriously. Yeah. That's a quote by Rob Hubbard, by the way. He said that first.
Yeah. Well, good quote. And I'll actually, bringing Jochen Hippel into things, it actually ties out with, I was talking to Jeroen, I think it was last night, we discussed the future composer player, because the future composer tracker on the Commodore 64 was actually a re-engineering of your track.
Noisy Pillar, right?
Noisy Pillar and Scout.
It was Noisy Pillars, yeah. Either Noisy Pillars or Scout, but it must be Noisy Pillars because Noisy Pillars was the same routine and sounds I used for Scout.
Yeah, and
so
to
it was
connect,
that one. Reverse engineered.
Reverse engineered and turning into Future Composer. On the Amiga, there's also an editor called Future Composer that was a reverse engineer of Jochen Hippel's music from Astaroth and other things. So Future Composers are not really the future; they're just, I don't know, mishmashes of old replay routines. So that's.
History composers.
that's a different. That's a good idea. No, but that is also it's quite interesting to actually get. There are so many links between all the guys in this industry because it's a quite small industry, even though it's worldwide. But do you guys? I mean, when you were making music for games, for instance, did you feel any more competition with the other composers, or did you discuss a lot with the other people around, Chris, for instance?
Actually, not back then. Yeah. Nowadays, maybe different, but back then, I think there were really only like a handful or a few more composers, particularly in Europe, that were doing this kind of stuff. So there were enough projects to go around, I think. Though I would have probably not shared my source codes or something like that.
Yeah, I think the same thing. We always had to work enough to do. I never felt any competition at all.
No.
I think we all had our own scene we worked in. He had his publishers and game developers. Same for Rain. I think you also did with System 3. You got some things going and.
Yeah, only thing, I went to London a few times, but besides, it's just long phone calls with Charles. No, but you do it alone. I think you can just analyze, actually, what other people do, and just, I think, even without knowing, you copy each other anyway. So,
but of course.
Not a lot of, and I didn't went to a lot of parties, too, at those times, too. Just Venlo a few times, and that was it.
But you were in touch with the demo scene already back then?
I was not in the game industry at all. I was very much in the demo industry, yeah.
Yeah. And Chris, well, you
for
were
me
not.
For me, it was the other way around. Yeah. I started with Rainbow Arts before the demo scene really took off.
Yeah.
And so I only visited Venlo once.
Okay.
So I did not. In fact, like in our company, they were the enemy. You know, like the copiers and stuff like that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So there was. Oh well.
He actually pointed at me. I was the enemy.
Yeah, I mean that's always a big problem. But I mean, back in the days, the demo party was not a demo party; it was actually a copy party from the original start. So,
it really was.
Yeah,
but I think because of the copy parties, the Venlo parties, especially and there were quite a few around in Europe.
Yeah,
I think actually most games actually sold better because of it, because people could try before they buy.
Yeah,
some games were not that cheap. I mean, seriously, we were like 14, 15, 16 years old. That was not easy money to cough up, you know?
No, that's true.
Excuses.
Yeah, and that also, I mean, Hawkeye, was that the first game you actually made music for? Or the actual game?
Yeah, I think it was actually the first game music I started working on.
Yeah.
In between, I think, Battle Valley came out from Usen. But that was just because Hawkeye was released a little later.
Yeah.
But it was the game music was composed. That was the first one I composed.
And as a sort of some people know that I am in and have been in a group called Razor 1911. It's kind of infamous in some aspects. Hawkeye was a bitch to actually crack. just so you know.
Because of Mario van Zees, the programmer, he actually worked hard on trying to prevent it from being cracked immediately.
Yeah, so the Amiga version. The Amiga version was a bitch. Just so you know. Okay. Just take that out. I'll edit that out from the video later on.
I'll give him that compliment then.
Yes, do that. So I don't know how much time do you have. Oh, it's good. We're good. Have you guys started thinking about any questions at all? I know one from my colleague, Auden. He's somewhere around here. He just actually wanted to ask you guys if... do you have any demo scene composers that are your favorites when it comes to Commodore 64 music? Not any game people, but demo music composers. Your favorites in the...
For me, the most underrated composer is Johannes Bjerregaard.
Yeah,
it's my all-time hero.
Yeah, agreed.
Not even underestimated, but it's incredible what the guy does. Yeah. He has all things combined in.
And he actually has a Kickstarter thing now going. Was that Johannes?
Yeah, yeah. He's now in Denmark to get a treatment.
For cancer as well. Yeah. But, he's a great musician.
Yeah,
Chris, for instance.
From the demo scene, really, I don't know.
Shame on you.
Mr. Elite.
This guy here, maybe. I don't know. I mean, really, like, I don't know that many demo scene projects, so...
Oh, well, you'll learn. There's still time. Jeroen?
Well, I have a lot, of course. Well, Drex, Thomas Mogensen, Laxity, Thomas Patterson. I love that guy. He's an amazing musician in real life, too. Like, he has bands and just incredible, incredible keyboard player and stuff. I think L-Man is doing a really awesome job on the set nowadays. Just brings forth these techniques that are just like crazy.
That one I'm aware of, but he's like new generation. The newest generation.
Yes, true. Okay, from the old school generation, Johannes Bjerregaard definitely always ruled my world, seriously. Sick. I looted up songs by Rob Hubbard, Martin Galway, Ben Douglas. Yeah. Johannes Bjerregaard standard. And it was not all game music or something.
Is Tim Fallon considered demo scene?
No,
not at all.
Because I like his stuff.
Tim Fallon is awesome, but he's like definitely not demo scene at all. not even this much.
He's been to a Back in Time Live.
Least.
But it's not demo scene. But,
so. But there's more.
He's a nice guy.
There's metal. Dane. I'm leaving out names now. I at least mentioned some of them, and let's see. JCH actually did some really awesome tracks too, especially technically. Sorry that I say it that way; it sounds a bit negative, but I don't mean it that way.
Yeah.
One thing I can mention maybe is the Trap demo. Ben Daglish, obviously. Yeah. Not demo scene per se, but demo. A demo.
Yeah, beautiful one. That's very true. Yeah. So let's count this for this moment. That's good. Any more questions? You haven't taken. There we have Lala.
Come on. Hi, I am Lala from the United States. Did you guys have any idea back then how popular your music was, and that people frequently bought games just to listen to your music?
Did you get that?
Who's first?
Not me.
I heard about it from the fans, actually. They wrote me letters that I unfortunately never answered because I didn't like to write physical letters. It would have been better like in the internet age, you know, with answering. But back then, they were just like... discarded, unfortunately. But I read them all, and I enjoyed them, and I always keep saying that.
I heard it a lot. Not at the time I wrote it, because it was, like, a gray area, basically. I sometimes got letters like you did.
I never got letters.
Oh, poor guy. it was just occasionally got a letter, like, coming through. There was no internet, there was no email, there was nothing. So... but I did. People somehow got my home phone number, and they talked about it. Like, okay, I bought the game, and I just listened to it, to the music, and it started up. But it was just very rarely, like once every 6 months or something, you know. And then when the internet came up, 1994, I moved to actually Norway, to Oslo, to work at Funcom. We had internet, and I got an email address. like rutel@something.com, and I just like got flooded with like the search. It was really, really shocking almost, but it, yeah, it was.
That was really the start of the internet. Then everything just, I thought at 91, I thought this whole thing is dead.
Yeah.
That was it. You're just free. And then at 96, 1897, you got the internet, and then everything is coming back like a big loop.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable. You had like the X party in 98, and it's still coming, and more people are even coming. So it's just like this rejuvenation or something. It's really amazing.
Yeah, it is.
And then it's easier to meet your fan. But, you know, but it's, you know what I mean? It's really, I think it's due to the internet, not because you get letters.
But to answer your question, because I never realized that it would be that famous or that remixed or that it's going to be orchestral performances of it.
No.
You know, seriously, that's the thing that I never would have dreamed of. You can dream of it, but you don't expect it at all.
Chris, you were...
I had actually put my home address in the sound monitor lines, you know.
Yeah, well,
that was a little bit of a mistake, I think.
So you got overwhelmed with fan mail? Or
there was definitely a lot of mail coming in the beginning, and my family had to then send it to Rainbow Arts. And they weren't happy about it.
Underwear.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's good. That's what you're looking for, right?
Yeah.
And we have a question from Chris. What was the worst software house to work for?
I know the answer for Rain, but I don't think I'll say it.
It's okay. I know what you're going through, but it's okay. I had fun. I was young. I was 16. Come on.
Exactly.
I got totally... How do you say that? Ripped off by System 3, but it was fun. Anyway, I had a lot of fun.
Well,
it was my first time. What is his name? Doc, the painter?
Yeah.
We went to Liverpool to do the Last Ninja 3 thingy, and I was 16. I never drank anything.
Yeah.
And then Doc, he was a heavy drinker, actually. And so we went into this club, into Leven, and then instead of beer, I thought that's not a good idea, so I took cider, apple cider, which is, I think, has the same amount of alcohol. So I think I just vomited the whole place. But in the end, I won because they really had to drag Doc into the car. So I was still the lucky guy. I was still standing at the end. And then Stan Stambly, he's supposed to take me the next day to Heathrow Airport to catch my plane, and we left way, way too late, so we were just like driving 200 fucking miles an hour catching my plane, and then I had to call my parents. I won't be landing in Schiphol. I will be landing in Rotterdam, a different airport. That was cool. 16, so that was my... It's an experience of a lifetime.
Yes, so you can actually
not
erase
getting
that.
Paid, but still...
I know that feeling, sadly, with System 3 because of Fuzzball, but that's another story.
I had fun. Come on, who cares?
Exactly. Chris, have you had any
bad experience?
In those
years, I worked mostly for Rainbow Arts, and they were good. They were bad times. They were good times, but I don't really have anything negative to say.
That's good. Jeroen, anything?
No. I've been lucky, I guess. I can't say that anyone treated me badly or something. There was always a big mutual respect somehow. I can say who really treated me really well, though.
Yeah, that was
Probe Software.
Okay.
The CEO just made sure that I get access to all the proper tools, the proper hardware. Yeah. Also for Nintendo, it was really weird to actually make music on Nintendo 8-bit because there was no way to burn these cartridges without the Nintendo development kit. And that's not the dude from Japan that needs adopting
licensing
parents.
Licensing and stuff, yes.
Yeah. You know what I mean? But anyway, that was it was just amazing to work for him, and he just trusted me with anything.
Yeah.
Like, artistic license, so I could just really like go free on big titles of Robocop, and just amazing stuff.
Any preferred? I mean, you did a lot of in-house work for Rainbow Arts, but any other companies that you're like, hey, they did the extra for my stuff?
No, but I did enjoy the work for Loris Yell with Jim Power because it was the soundtrack on the Amiga first, and then they ported it to, I think, three or four systems and paid me almost the same as for the original, but I only had to port it, so that was like a good project at the time for me.
Oh, and financial-wise, that's good. Rein, what companies did you work with, I mean, except from System 3? game, Flame Boss Quest?
Well, everything went through to Charles. So, okay. But Charles didn't pay me either. So that's no good experience at all. So
he didn't pay you?
No, of course not.
You kidding me?
He paid you.
Well, yeah, he had to.
God damn it! Yeah, but you live next to him. I live like the other half of other side.
You kidding me?
I'm gonna call him again. It's so long. It's so long when you call him. It doesn't end when he calls.
Okay, I did not know that. Now I'm a bit ashamed.
he seems quite busy lately with the sound design. Charles Deanen, by the way, in case you missed that one.
Charles Deanen, TMC from Scoop Designs.
Yeah.
Works now in America, sound designer mainly for trailers for Hollywood blockbuster movies. Pretty
and
good
games,
and really
yeah.
good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah.
He does a lot of the Battlefield trailers and all that stuff as well. So really good stuff. Any more questions, by the way? I can't really see you guys that much because I have a light here. So if in case anyone has something. Yes, we have one there. You can.
Yes. That's a very good question, actually.
Repeat it a bit. So
Sorry. He asked, like, I did conversions for a lot of the Sega games, like Golden Axe, Turbo Outrun, and Outrun, and Afterburner, the most popular titles at the time. It was actually like that Sega did want the conversions of those arcades to at least Commodore 64. I didn't know of any other conversions. There was apparently a Mega version, which I have nothing to do with. But they did record it from the original arcade and sent me a little cassette tape for me to listen to. What I did, sat down at the Commodore 64, mostly at night, even when I had to go to school. So, and then with a Walkman, Sony Walkman, I remember it so well, listened to a bit of it and then started converting the notes. But I had the cool thing is that they left me the freedom to have artistic license to, because you know the arcade machines were pretty advanced sound-wise when it came to sound, like polyphony and everything. But I literally got it sent by tape, and that's how I got the guideline for the melodies and the harmonies. It was really fun to do that, actually.
Charles actually sent me music too. I also had sheet music. No, it's really funny.
For which game?
I don't know. I think it was maybe even for Golden Axe. I'd like some, but of course it was too bad. But
okay.
You never knew that.
Well, no, I never got sheet music. No, not like
sheet
that.
Music,
it was always by doing it by hearing. Also, this is a very interesting thing. Later, this is like talking 2000, I think, 4 already. I got to convert the Mortal Kombat music from from Dan Forden, which is seriously, if you listen to that music from the original arcade, it's impossible to convert by ear. Seriously, it's like it's so FM and so sharp and everything. I did it anyway, but that was literally the most painstaking job I've ever done in my entire life, no matter what. And when I actually presented it to Dan Forden himself, he said, "Do you have the MIDI files?" I asked him. He said, "No, they're lost. Definitely, there's nothing, no trace. That's just the music here. And you're crazy if you try to convert this. It's like 16th, 14th beat and 17th, 13th and whatever." But when I did it, it was just like it became a principal matter that I would do it. And I heard later, when the project was finished, that 5 composers went before me and just ditched the project altogether. Said, "Fuck it, I'm not going to do this." When I would have known that information, I could have asked like a huge sum of money, seriously, to actually do that project, because I know that it was a $2 million project, and it would have been canned if I couldn't do the proper conversion of the music.
Yeah.
That would have given me some real leverage. And I got a couple of thousands for it. But anyway, I did it, and Dan Forden was very impressed.
And you have a star on your wiki.
Something like that.
Something like that. And Chris,
similar
did you
story,
that?
Yeah. So R-Type on the Commodore 64. We did it in 6 weeks.
Ooh.
And we did not get anything because Rainbow Arts was under threat of being sued because of Katakis. And the only redeeming thing was they said, if you can make us R-Type, then we're going to drop the suit and you change Katakis a little bit up and we're fine. But we had to do it all ourselves, and we actually went into the arcade with a recorder and recorded it off the machine and then transcribed it. And so, and then the next one was for me Monkey Island,
yeah,
which I got from Michael Land. And I had MIDI files, but they were like made for like 32 voices sound cards on the PC, high-end sound card on the PC. And to squeeze that into the four voices of the Amiga was quite a challenge. And he also did like, he played it freely, he did not quantize. It was a total nightmare. And my friend Rudolf Stemmer and I did it in like a week or so. But it was really bone jarring, hard work.
Yeah, well.
And then even later, like I did the Star Wars Rogue Squadron series on Nintendo, starting with the Nintendo 64, which was the last cartridge-based system. So we had to squeeze kind of like orchestra-style sound into a cartridge. And that's why they got me to America to do it.
Oh.
And that was insane. I was invited to the ranch. I got copies of the scores. But since I don't read scores, they were of limited help. I mean, I got a little bit information out of it for like voicing and other things. But that was also insane. And I remember once I was done with that project, I decided to stay in the US and continue, but my health was in decline, and I couldn't listen to the soundtrack for like 3 years because I thought I did a shitty job. And then once I listened to it later, I thought like, hey, it was pretty good actually.
Yeah. It's good that you come to that conclusion after a bunch of years.
Yes,
anyway.
Yes.
And Jiren?
Yeah, just it's a very funny thing that for, I think it was Backbone Vancouver, I did a lot of conversions from, seriously, the classics like Gyrus from Frogger, all the home ditties.
Oh.
But actually, they're really interesting, and I don't think any one of you heard it, but actually you should put them online. So they're actually very good conversions. So sorry I didn't say it myself, but people love them. And out of respect for the original games, I mean, we know it doesn't know Frogger. I mean, so one of the, we actually looked it up, 1981.
Yep. Yes.
It's like a classic thing. I mean, I just love doing all this conversion. Also, which is always a hard one. Come on, give me the name. Give me the name. It's easy.
Anyone?
No. Well, Frogger was one, but no.
Describe the game.
in the game, it's the game that says all your base have belonged to us or something.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of that one. Sorry.
Yeah, that's really terrible. Okay,
yes.
Bad with names. Oh. If I come up with it, I will say. But that was a hard conversion. But it was really, really fun to do the old arcade games back into a modern jacket. It was all for the Xbox 360, by the way.
Oh,
but did you do Gyrus?
I didn't do Gyrus, but I did the conversion for Gyrus for the new Xbox. Konami Classics. That was.
I thought that Gyrus on the C64 was excellent arcade conversion.
That's not.
Okay,
that's
all right.
No. Then no credits to you.
No credits to me.
We have a couple more minutes. I see some hands in the air there.
You asked, is there any music from games that we three wished we did the music for, that we thought it was that good, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You start, Ryan.
What?
You start.
Yeah, shit, I'm still thinking. I was dreaming. Maybe Lost Ninja 1 and 2, that would be fucking funny.
Which one? Which one?
Lost Ninja 1 and 2, and then like the whole home run. No, I know. Like or
hat-trick.
even but I'm not so old, so maybe if I would have done Commando, if I want everything from Rob Hubbard, just to be this kind of guy at the beginning, you know, changing the whole thing, it would be great. But I'm not.
You're not? Chris, you were about to say something.
I don't know. there were a few.
Yeah.
Among them the Portal series. Even though there was not that much in-game music, but I really loved how they did it.
Mm.
And of course, like the final song, that was just, I wish I would have done something like that, yeah.
Whew, that is a hard one to answer, actually. I'm really bad with names. I even couldn't remember the name. I just still don't have it. But I think what he said, Rob Howard, Crazy Comets, the real classic. Actually, Commando, these really classics that came by. Also, Martin Galway.
Of course.
Some of the Ocean ones. I think one of the things I was blown away by was Rambo First Blood Part 2. That conversion just was so smooth.
I watched the loading screen like a million times. Yeah. Just loading the game and not playing it, just loading the game. Oh.
Amazing. Yeah, it's true. It's true. But there's also modern games Monkey Island actually was one of the soundtracks I really adored because it was all classical-ish and they had like also folk music in it and it was always like appropriate pirate music and the sound design in general together with sound effects and voiceovers and everything that was a sound project I know that was put a lot of effort a lot of time into. So that was I wish I could have worked on that. It was more movie based script. Interactive movie-ish, you know, the whole thing. And I really feel for you had to convert that to four channels, seriously.
Yeah, it's amazingly done. We're about to round this off a bit, but yes, sadly, because we have Fast Loader's going to do some rock here, and you guys will participate as well. So, but one final round here. Chris kindly helped me remind, even though it was already in here. Ben Daglish should be here. He's not, sadly, but he's here anyway. What are your fondest memories of him in this sense? I mean, music-wise, person-wise, he was a crazy guy.
He's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
No, it's really crazy. He's like so wild, like this energy kind of bulb, kind of a...
Yeah.
I don't know. Because I played with him at the bid parties in 2000, at the beginning of 2000.
Yeah.
And he's just crazy and fucking talented, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just
it's perfect. Weird. It's kind of weird.
I never knew him in person until Back in Time Live Brighton, where I met him briefly, and he was just like, whoa, like, what a personality, but we didn't have much time. But his music, obviously, on the Commodore 64 was he was one of the composers from England that I adored.
Yeah.
And I mentioned Trap Demo earlier. Yeah. That's probably one of my all-time favorite pieces on the Commodore 64, because it's such a journey.
Yeah, very true word there.
Yeah.
And Jeroen?
I met him in very long time ago when I was a kid at the Commodore show, I think it was, or PCW show. He was playing drums at some setup or something. But to me, he was this hero, just playing that rock star thing.
Yeah.
And but then later I met him at Back in Time in, I think it was Manchester. Could that be correct? Manchester. Yeah. And he actually played on stage, played the flute next to me. Crazy guy.
Any excuse.
but really good. Also, like when he was there, he just there was people standing in the back, and it was not that crowded. So he just managed to get people all in the front. With the punishment, if they wouldn't, he would like humiliate them in a funny way, funny way. And he really got people dancing and everything. Yeah. Later on that evening, we went to the hotel and we just hang out with a bottle of wine, you know. And it was real fun. And always, this guy was so direct that, you know, if you ask him a question, he would just say yes, no, and there's no maybe. It's just right in your face, you know. I did have contact with him on Skype. And, you know, when sometimes I had a music show, he just was straightforward to you. And funny guy. Seriously, a waste if you haven't met him. Yeah. And will be missed dearly. It's a real character. And I'm so...
And taking that to get people, abuse them nicely at the Back in Time Live in Brighton 2015, right? He actually made that into a thing as well. So you could ask him to abuse you, basically, which was an amazing
best
twist.
Best MC ever, right?
And Chris is holding the there's a Blu-ray, bootleg Blu-ray available on that one. And as a final little roundup, what are you guys up to today? Ryan, you're doing music?
I'm still doing music, yeah. But I kind of left with, because I didn't like the Amiga, so I did Lost in Year 3 and something else for Charles, and I just sold it right away because I didn't like the...
Okay.
I already went to the conservatory, and they had like this samplers, the Akai samplers. They were like 16-bit, like, woohoo, that's like the real thing, and then like this Amiga. So I just sold it, and I never looked back on video games ever.
Okay.
Even music. So I just went into real production, so I produce records now. I bought a church. I made the church into a studio.
I bought a church.
As you do.
Says,
it's
like
very easy in Holland. It's not a big deal. Nobody.
When you say real production, what do you mean by that?
Atheism rules there. It's really going well, atheism. No, so I turned that into a studio, and I do a lot of film music, and that's how I made my living.
Produces really famous bands in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
I'm from the Netherlands, I know that.
Nobody knows.
He won't say it, he's too modest.
No.
Chris, you're still in the game music industry?
So
game.
He bought a church, I live in a chateau.
Yes.
But I still do music for games, but I also concentrate more on my fans nowadays.
Yeah.
And so we've done a few Kickstarters, as you know, and the last one is still, I'm finishing up right now, because it's a crazy project where I do a bonus disc with our original Amiga sound, like, as you know,
in TFMX,
like a virtual Turrican 4 album, if you will, as if I had composed it in 1994, and it's almost done. Actually, pre-orders will be available soon, and that's exciting. One bonus track will be Commodore 64 on my TFMX, so that will be exciting, and the other thing is I do Patreon. I don't know if anybody knows Patreon, where you can support your artist directly with a dollar or so. And I do their royalty-free music. So everybody who supports gets all the music pieces that are released there. I think I have 9 now, and I do one a month. Royalty-free, so they can use it in YouTube, in their game, in commercial project, doesn't matter. All I want is a credit.
Which is not too bad. Yeah, that's cool. Jeroen, what are you up to?
Of course, a Telemore project. Don't want to talk too much about it, but I'm working on it.
Yeah,
it's
that's good.
Progressing nicely. On the side, I'm actually working on Barents Sea Fishing. It's a PC game.
Okay.
I think there's also Microsoft involved. Mm-hmm. Doing really nice rock tracks-ish inspired things for that.
Okay, just inspired.
It still has a kind of, they would say it was actually as a Jeroen-Tel influence or something, but still rock-based music. Ish, really great game actually. I didn't expect to like it that much. It's just actually Barents Sea Fishing. You have a fishing boat. You can walk around in it and everything, and you can go fishing with nets and whatever you do in the Barents Sea. And it looks brilliant. It's a very stylish game.
Cool thing.
And on top of that, I've got some pitches for other video games. So yeah, it will always be my passion too, and that's something I can't let go of. Video games just have my passion. Mm-hmm. I love them, and
That's not too bad. I mean, we did it quite well in time as well, because in about 10 minutes or something, it depends on the re-rigging of the stage, we'll have the fast loaders here, we'll have Ryan participating, we'll have Chris participating, Jeroen will be dancing.
I might play something if you want.
Yeah. But you guys and gals should enjoy themselves. Catch these guys as well if you want to have any other questions that we couldn't bring this up, because they'll hang around. They're good guys, and I guess that there might be some not good guys. There might be some just chilling talk after. And after the fast loaders, Ziona will round everything up with keeping the beat up as well. So there's still more to come tonight. But thank you guys for being there. Thank you guys for asking questions.
Yeah, thanks for being the scene, man.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you, everyone, for coming.
Yes, enjoy. And in 10 minutes-ish, fast loaders.